Hello and welcome to the MVP, the Mass Violence Podcast, the official podcast of the National Mass Violence Victimization Resource Center. I'm Dan Smith, the NMVVRC Director of Resources and Technology, and I'm absolutely thrilled to introduce today's special guest, former Charleston Mayor Joseph Riley. Calling him a former mayor, though, is a huge understatement because Mayor Riley is an institution. He was first elected mayor in 1975, and he served in that capacity continuously for the next 40 years, winning election 10 times, usually in a landslide. He has won countless awards for civic and urban leadership. For example, he was named a recipient of the National Medal of Arts by President Obama, served as the president of the U.S. Conference of Mayors, led Charleston through the devastation of Hurricane Hugo and its aftermath, and spearheaded numerous redevelopment efforts that transformed Charleston from a struggling small city to one of the world's most praised tourist destinations. Near the end of his final term in office, though, Mayor Riley had the unenviable task of guiding Charleston through the Mother Emanuel Church shooting, during which a racially motivated white gunman killed 9 African-American churchgoers after participating in Bible study with them. Charleston's response to that tragedy was seen as exemplary in many ways, and today we're going to be talking with Mayor Riley about how the city responded, how Charleston did, or perhaps did not, actually prepare for mass violence, and what lessons he'd like to share with other civic leaders. Mayor, it's truly an honor to talk with you today.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
You're very welcome. So I actually am curious, how did you first hear about the Mother Emanuel shooting?
I was home. It was after dinner. It was 9:20. I was reading, and the phone rang. It was the chief of police.
Okay, so the police chief is the one who calls the mayor about those things.
And he said, Mayor Riley, we had a shooting at Mother Emanuel, and it appears that there would be some fatalities. Mm. That's all he told me, and what he really knew at that moment. That's how I found out.
Okay. And after getting news like that, what are some of the first things that you, as a mayor, do?
Well, the first thing I did was say to myself that everything I did that evening and forward had to be perfect. The next thing I did was it had been very hot, the hottest day of the year.
I remember.
And so I thought about what I should wear, what kind of clothing. I had on leader shorts and a t-shirt. And I looked in the closet and said, you need to wear a suit and a tie, and because the clergy who come to the church will be dressed. Mm-hmm. And I had to show the utmost respect for the congregation, mm-hmm. and the families, and just to not let up, know that your responsibility, as best you possibly could, would to be perfect in everything you said and did.
What was the source of that thought that everything had to be perfect?
I guess the source was my experience as mayor. Mm-hmm. You just have to, that's your duty. And one of the first things I did is I got to the scene. We couldn't get into the church. Mm-hmm. That was a police barricaded. But I began to get the picture of what happened, because there had been survivors that could recount the horrible deeds. And I had to wait a while, because the police were going through carefully the crime scene, and I said, what is the exact right thing to say? You know, it's something like that. You mm-hmm. can come off very trite, mm-hmm. or whatever. So I had some time to think. I'd brought a little steno pad with me from home, just as a natural reaction, and I kept working with words, and then I came up with unspeakable act that would, you know, that wasn't trite, mm-hmm. but anyway, and then just kept, it was at a high level of tension, obviously upset with the heartbreaking news, and it unfolded because we knew there were some fatalities. Then I got to the church and it was 8, and then a person had passed away on the EMS vehicle. Mm-hmm. And then I knew the pastor well. Mm-hmm. He was in the state senate, and actually I was the honorary chair of the committee to raise money for an elevator for the church. The church was up 2 flights of stairs, a flight and a half, but it had no elevator. So I'd been working with him on that, and we had a nice relationship. Mm-hmm. But I knew he was in the Senate, and the Senate was in special session. It was the summer wrap-up of the session. So I knew he was flying back from Columbia, you know, at 100 miles an hour to get to the scene. And as time was passing, I asked one of the police officers, one of the leading police command staff, I said, "Is Reverend Pinckney arrived yet?" And he said, "Mayor Riley, Reverend Pinckney was in there." So then the beginning of the full gravity, because it went from 8-9 parishioners to someone I knew very well. I had been speaking with that week, and then it turns out I knew the others. And so it was heartbreaking, and it was, you know, just a challenge that I had not expected.
Yeah.
But I knew I had the duty for the citizens of my city to seek to achieve perfection in what we did and how we responded.
Had there been any sort of planning ahead of time? Did Charleston have sort of a community preparedness plan for a mass shooting incident or anything like that?
Well, you know, I knew in my job as mayor that my first responsibility was to have a great police department. Mm-hmm. We did a lot of other things. Mm-hmm. So that was always a top priority, bringing the best people. We had the best paid police staff in the country. Almost every one of our police officers was a college graduate. We got great police chiefs, as we did at the time of this tragedy. And that's first duty for the citizens, is to give them quality police force just to help ensure safety and the reality of safety and the expectation of safety. Mm-hmm. You live a happier life in a community if you feel safe. So we invested heavily in the quality of our police department. I knew many of the top leaders in the department very well. And so I didn't know they had done this. But after the shooting in the Northeast, where all the kids were killed.
Mm-hmm. In Connecticut.
The school.
Sandy Hook.
Sandy Hook. Unbeknown to me, our police didn't come to me to say, "Mayor, hey, what do we do?" And but they knew to set up a protocol to contact family members if there was a mass violent act experience. And so they had done that. I didn't know that. Lieutenant Broughton, now Assistant Chief Broughton, was in charge of that by Chief Mullen. And that turned out to be more important than a listener might realize, because when there is an act of mass violence that is so turbulent in the community for all who live there, it is those family members and those connected must find out about this with great gentleness and care, because the early moments after a serious event, whether it's a sudden illness or an injury or injury to the community, the early moments are very important. And so our great police department had set up a protocol. So then Assistant Chief Broughton, Naomi, brought into action their protocol. So the shooting occurred at 9:05. I got the word at 9:20. No press was involved. No press knew. They knew there was a shooting. Mm-hmm. You know, we're going to let anybody know until the family knew first. And then we tell the community in an organized way. And so they reached out to the family members, a large circle of family members and parishioners who were connected with those who were at the Bible study. They just knew they had a loved one at the Bible study and there had been a shooting. So at 11:20, so 2 hours and 15 minutes after the shooting, in the hotel ballroom around the corner were 250 people assembled who were that range of kin or friendship.
Wow.
And Chief Mullen told them what happened. I always, in these kind of events, I always let the police chief speak. I never like it when mayors, you see an event, and all of a sudden they assume that they're the all-knowing, you know, and all of that, and put on a flak jacket or something like that. It's kind of phony, I always thought. So the police chief was a spokesperson. I was there with him, so 250 people, and he said we had a shooting in Mother Manual. And there were 9 fatalities. So at that moment in that room, 250 plus people knew that their friend, loved one, had been killed for the first time. And every possible sound that a human can make in a time of complete despair and sorrow, the cacophony of those sounds fill that room. Wailing and weeping and crying and pleading and then I said, we're going to hold hands and we're going to pray together. And they did. And we hug each other, and they did, and we did. It took a while. It was that intimate setting that was foundational for those people in terms of how they came to know this great tragedy. And then we had a press conference at 12:20 a.m. Active shooter 9:05, then it was Chief Mullen and me there. So the community did not know what had happened except there had been a shooting at the church. Chief Mullen again gave the details, and then I explained, and I said, this was a hate crime. Get that out right away. It's a hate crime, a bigot came into the sacred place and killed people because of the color of their skin. And we're going to catch him. And we did. In less than, 16 hours, we caught him. And then I said that the way we will deal with this in our community is through love and caring for each other. And that's what the community did. It was really something. The next morning, before the sun rose, there were people of all colors and backgrounds and experiences in front of that church. Many had never been to that church before, found it in the news where the church was. And they came to hug each other and weep together and pray together and later on the day to bring flowers. But it was this wonderful, natural response of love and heartbreak. And that just, kind of laid a foundation of how the community was going to respond. Because the community had been devastated. The community was heartbroken. The community had lost something that you couldn't imagine you would ever lose, and there would be an act of utter hatred that one would never observe. And one thing I did say on TV that night, which I thought was very important, was that the killer was not from Charleston. Mm-hmm. He was from a community about 110 miles away. Mm-hmm. And that was important because this wasn't a homegrown, this wasn't a community person who, this hadn't
turned on his own people or something.
It wasn't incubated mm-hmm. in our town. It was someone mm-hmm. from away mm-hmm. that brought this violence to the whole community and in many ways mm-hmm. To our country.
Do you think it would have been harder for Charleston to sort of react the way it did with, I lived here at that time and I remember very well the kind of emotion you're describing, both as a reaction to hearing the news and sort of in response to, well, now what are we going to do about this awful thing? Are we going to have riots or are we going to not have riots? Do you think that would have been different had this person not been from the Columbia area and been from Charleston?
Well, that's a hypothetical that mm-hmm. I think is extremely unlikely. It just wouldn't have happened. It wouldn't have been, we wouldn't have produced that.
Okay.
There was too much going on in the community and positive friendship. Mm-hmm. Maybe a group disagreements of matters. And one thing that, you in disasters, you're caught where you were then. Mm-hmm. You can't start preparing. Mm-hmm. You catch where you are. So our community had been working hard over the years together in addressing concerns and disappointments and in responding to any apparent slights or lack of friendship or whatever.
Incivility kind of stuff.
Yeah, and so what our community had created and what we created was a place where, there were not substantial pockets of alienation, and it was our community. And someone asked me that, and I said, why did it not break out into violence and all that? I said, and riots and fire. I said, if something heartbreak happens to you, you don't go break something in your own home. You don't smash something that's of value to you. You're not going to mm-hmm. harm your home. So this was our home, mm-hmm. and people weren't going to do that. The home had been violated, and so they responded, and the shooting happened at 9:05 on Wednesday night. Friday night, less than 48 hours, we had a wonderful vigil mm-hmm. at the arena. Mm-hmm. Around the corner, and you just saw that racially mixed group of people, 5,000, praying together, holding hands, wiping each other's tears, expressing love and sorrow, and they were bonded. Mm-hmm. So the community, and I think just in terms of responding to acts of mass violence, the preparation is important. Mm-hmm. And you prepare in many different ways. Mm-hmm. You prepare formally as Assistant Chief Broughton did mm-hmm. With the...
By learning about Sandy Hook and understanding
right.
the yeah. notification protocol.
That's right, and all of that. And then you prepare through your daily lives and you're ready. Emily Dickinson said something, about you people, which I do, get ready for the hereafter by going to church on Sunday, and some people are going there all the time. Or, the community's preparation mm-hmm. in many ways was its, you know, basic goodness and connectedness. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, with the police department was ready, and our police department also had the technology to get up on the in the church where the camera was. That was not very sophisticated film, and piece by piece take it apart and take it to the police department's lab that night, and were able to get the image of that horrible man, get that out in the national media right away, which enabled him to be caught. You know, and him quickly. Being caught was very important.
You mentioned the police department was well prepared for sort of the crime response to this, and the community was also just sort of almost characterologically prepared. Were there other civic agencies or when mass violence happens, I think people tend to think only in terms of like, well, the law enforcement is doing their thing. But so many other times there are other community services as well. Even things like, well, because I know that hundreds of people descended on the nearby hotel and on that area. They needed places to park. They needed food. They needed information. Were there other civic agencies that were, you think, well prepared or that are important to?
Well, I think they're prepared by being engaged in a community. Obviously, what the Medical University did, and their you know, the Department of Mental Health, and was, you know, had been working on these kinds of things for years, and those trauma responding to skills were extraordinarily important. And then, you know, we've had Parkins and other disasters, and you know, whether it's the Red Cross or the other, you know, the food banks and those kinds of things. They were, you know, they were, the community was nimble. It had all these capacities, had really planned to do this, but it's like, you know, like you taught when playing in football in high school, is you're on your toes, you're on your defense, you're on your toes, you don't know whether it's coming from right or left, whatever. But don't be flat-footed. Well, the community wasn't flat-footed; it was on its toes.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's an interesting analogy because, you know, when you try and talk to some civic leaders about preparedness, and you know, do you have any confidence in your community's ability to respond appropriately should mass violence happen? Sometimes the answer you get is, "I think so, but that's probably not going to happen here." You know, that's, you know, just so unlikely. And then you have a community like Sutherland Springs, Texas, which is, you know, super small. But they have a massive mass violence incident in their community. And I wonder if you have any words of wisdom or guidance for other civic leaders out there about whether to prepare, how to prepare for something as unlikely, statistically, as a mass violence incident.
Well, I think the Center for Mass Violence for our country is doing and will increasingly do a great service because it you know, we had hurricanes here and then you know, really challenging big events, and I think just to get into the national consciousness that you know, we might just really ought to be prepared for bad things happening, even though we don't expect it will or whatever. But we have to be nimble and we have to be ready, and we should be studying what other communities have done. And and again, as you know, Sister Chief Broughton did with the Sandy Hook experience. Okay, have a family response